Welcome to another deep dive. This time, we're journeying back to the medieval period. You know, that era of knights and castles and all that.
Yeah, our source material seems pretty into that whole romanticized image. Misty hills and daring adventures, that sort of thing.
But we're here to dig a little deeper at, see what life was really like for the folks who lived back then, beyond all the romanticized stuff.
Exactly. And the source material, even though it kind of romanticizes the time, it does hint at, like, how complicated things were. It talks about kingdoms and knights, of course, but battles too.
Yeah.
And a world where myth and reality kind of blurred together.
It's like that image from The Source, you know, the one with the blacksmith in the village hammering away at swords and jesters trying to get a laugh.
Yeah, yeah. But beyond those images, what was society actually like back then?
Good question.
Well, feudalism was a big deal. It was like this rigid hierarchy with a king at the top.
Right, the king. Then what?
Then came the nobles, knights, and then, well, the peasants.
And land was everything, right?
Pretty much. It meant power, prestige, the whole shebang. Loyalty and obligation, those are the glue that held this system together.
And for most people, it was all about farming, wasn't it?
Yeah, life revolved around agriculture, the rhythm of the seasons, that kind of thing. They mostly lived in villages, you know, rural areas.
Cities weren't really a big thing back then.
They existed, sure, but they were way smaller. Much less common than villages. Now, those knights.
Yeah, the knights. Were they all noble and chivalrous like we often think?
Well, chivalry was a huge ideal back then. It really shaped what people thought a knight should be. They had to be fierce warriors, obviously, but also uphold this code of honor. Honesty, loyalty, courtesy, even generosity.
So not just about fighting?
Nope. These values were supposed to guide them on and off the battlefield.
But did they actually live up to that ideal?
Well, that's a whole other question, isn't it? And those medieval feasts we read about, it seems like they were more than just about enjoying a good meal.
Right. What was the deal with those?
Oh, they were carefully planned. Served some important social and political functions, you know. Imagine feasts that could last for days.
Days.
Days. Crazy, right? Just this insane abundance of food. Meat, game, fruits, spices, you name it. And wine, of course. Tons of wine.
Wow. I can only imagine the amount of work that went into preparing those. What else is interesting about these feasts?
Well, the seating arrangements weren't random, that's for sure. Where you sat showed your social status. Closer to the lord or king, higher your rank.
So it was all about reinforcing that hierarchy.
Exactly. Makes you think about the conversations happening at those tables, doesn't it? The power dynamics at play.
It really does. Those little details are what make history come alive. Okay, so we got to talk about castles. They're kind of a big deal in, well, everything about medieval times. And our source is obsessed.
Yeah, and for good reason. Castles were way more than just imposing fortresses. They were these powerful symbols of authority, strategically placed, you know, on hilltops or near water.
Sure defense, right.
Of course, and to control resources. They acted as administrative centers. Offered protection of the lord, his family, and even the local folks when things got rough. But they weren't just about defense, were they?
Yeah, the source mentioned they had some comforts and amenities, too. Surprising, honestly. So, not just about surviving sieges.
Not at all. Defense was key, sure. But they were also designed for living. Imagine the kitchens where they cooked those massive feasts we talked about. Chapels for religious stuff. Even gardens to chill out in.
Wow, fancy.
Some even had their own water supply and sewage systems. Super advanced for the time. They were complex, fascinating structures. And let's be real, the skill it took to build these things back then, without modern tech, it's mind-blowing.
I can picture those castles now. The grandeur, the detail. But let's move on to something a bit less glamorous, but just as important. Medicine.
Ooh, yeah. This is where things get really different from today. Medical knowledge back then was, well, let's just say it was a mix of old theories, folk remedies, and a lot of religious beliefs.
So not exactly evidence-based medicine.
Yeah. Nope. They believe illness came from, like, an imbalance in the body or even divine punishment. Can you imagine?
I mean, they use bloodletting for pretty much everything, right? From headaches to, well, the plague.
Yeah, they thought removing bad blood would balance things out. Didn't really work out that way.
Just a huge surprise there.
Right.
What about herbal remedies? Weren't those popular too?
They were, yeah. Some actually worked, but a lot didn't. And without knowing how diseases spread, preventing or treating outbreaks was really, really tough.
So I'm guessing life expectancy wasn't great back then.
You got it. Infant mortality was high, and diseases like the plague, well, they could wipe out entire communities. It's a good reminder that life back then, even though it's romanticized, was really, really hard and often tragically short.
Definitely makes you appreciate modern medicine. But even with all the hardships, it seems like people still found ways to celebrate. The source mentions festivals happening all the time.
Oh, yeah, they did. They offered a break from, well, everything, you know, a chance for communities to come together.
What kind of festivals?
Well, they had religious holidays like Christmas and Easter, but also harvest festivals, celebrations for weddings, births, even local fairs and tournaments. Life wasn't all doom and gloom.
It makes you wonder if maybe with all our technology and entertainment today, we've lost some of that sense of community.
That's an interesting thought. I mean, we think of the medieval period as being pretty bleak, but they knew how to celebrate. Picture it. Lively music, colorful costumes, everyone sharing stories. Maybe those shared experiences really did create a stronger sense of community.
And I bet their music was pretty unique too.
Oh, definitely. Imagine traveling minstrels and troubadours, singing ballads about love and heroes. They'd play instruments like the lute, harp, or flute.
So even without Spotify, they had their entertainment.
Exactly. And don't forget dancing. Music and dance were a big deal. A way to express joy, release energy, and connect with others. Pretty different from how we consume entertainment today, often alone.
It makes you want to time travel, doesn't it? Experience it firsthand. But, let's be real, there was a darker side too. Warfare. Seems like battles and conflicts were just part of life.
Yeah, warfare was everywhere back then. Kingdoms fighting over land, power, religion. And while we think of knights as being brave, battles were brutal, terrifying. The source even describes those siege weapons, like catapults and battering rams.
Trying to break down those castle walls, I wonder, did they have ways to defend against those things?
See, you're already thinking like a medieval strategist.
Yeah.
And yeah, they did try to counter those weapons, pouring boiling oil, dropping heavy stuff from the walls. It was a constant back and forth, you know, trying to outsmart each other.
So while we might see it glamorized in movies and stories, the reality was far from glamorous.
For sure. There were acts of courage, definitely, but also immense suffering, loss. War, no matter the era, leaves its mark. So we've talked knights, castles, medicine, festivals, and war. It's clear medieval life was, well, a mixed bag. But what about their intellectual side? The source mentions a pretty vibrant literary scene.
Yeah, what were some of the popular stories from back then?
Oh, so many. There were epic poems like Beowulf, all about bravery and fighting monsters, Dante's Divine Comedy, this journey through heaven, hell, and purgatory, and of course the legends of King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table.
Those are still around today. Pretty impressive. I guess those themes, good versus evil, the search for meaning, they're timeless.
Exactly. They speak to something universal, don't they? But they also show us how people saw the world back then, their beliefs, their anxieties.
So more than just entertainment.
Right. We see their religious beliefs, social customs, how they thought about love, honor, chivalry. It's like a window into their minds.
Amazing. Mm. But we can't forget about their architecture, especially Gothic architecture. What stands out to you about that style?
Oh, it was revolutionary. Imagine walking into a Gothic cathedral for the first time. It would just blow you away. Mm-hmm. Soaring arches, tons of detail, those ribbed vaults and those incredible stained glass windows, light everywhere.
Yeah, the source mentions those features. Pointed arches, the intricate details, ribbed ceilings, the height, flying buttresses. It seems like they really pushed the limits of what was possible back then.
They did. And can you imagine building these huge structures without modern tools? Just wow. But it wasn't just about looks. Those high ceilings, all that space, it was meant to inspire awe, a sense of connection to something bigger.
I can only imagine the effort, the artistry.
Okay, before we move on, let's talk guilds. What was their deal?
Guilds were essential. They were like groups of craftsmen and merchants who teamed up to protect their interests and control their trades, set quality standards, controlled prices, provided training. But they weren't always easy to join.
The source mentioned that as guilds gained power, it became harder for people from the lower classes to join. Why was that?
Well, it's interesting, right? Even good things can have downsides. Guilds became powerful. They decided who got into a trade, limited competition, and made sure their members had a certain level of income. Not great if you're on the outside trying to get ahead. So they were important, but also kind of exclusive.
Yeah, it shows that balance between working together in competition, trying to get ahead, but also working within a system. We see those same things today, just in different ways. Makes you think, right? Mm-hmm. About individual ambition versus the good of the group.
That's a really good point. We've covered a lot in this part of our deep dive.
Yeah.
Knights, castles, medicine, festivals, warfare, even a bit about their intellectual and social structures. Where should we go next in our exploration of the medieval world?
I think it's time we delve into the role of religion. Back then, it wasn't just a personal thing, it was everything. Politics, law, art, culture, you name it. It's hard to even imagine its influence today.
Yeah, religion was like the foundation of everything back then. For most people, it wasn't just something you did on Sundays, you know, it was part of daily life all the time. And the church, well, they weren't just a spiritual authority.
What else were they?
They were major landowners, held a lot of political power. They were involved in education, even social services.
I guess you can't really overstate their influence. Not really. Think about it. The church wasn't just a place to worship. It was the center of everything, a place to learn, to get help if you needed it. It gave people a way to understand the world, comfort during tough times, and like a moral compass for daily life.
It's amazing how much religious belief shaped their lives, you know, how they saw the world, how they acted.
Totally different from today, where religion often takes a back seat. But hey, we've talked a lot about knights and nobles. What about the peasants, the majority of the population? What was their life like?
Yeah, it's easy to get caught up in the romanticized stuff, but their reality was probably pretty different.
For peasants, life was tough. Hard labor, not a lot of opportunities, always worried about famine, disease, war. Most were tied to the land, working for the lord of the manor.
Not exactly living the high life like the upper classes.
Yeah, the inequality was huge. But even with that rigid system, peasant communities were strong. They were close, found strength in their traditions and beliefs. They found ways to find joy, to make life meaningful even when things were hard. It says a lot about the human spirit, don't you think?
It does. It shows that even when things are tough, people find ways to connect, to celebrate. Their lives weren't just about hardship.
Exactly. And even though it was hard to move up in society, it wasn't impossible. Imagine a peasant learning a trade, maybe joining a guild, moving to a town or city for a better life. Those stories give us hope, show us that even in a rigid system, people could still strive for something more.
It's important to remember those stories, to see that hope, even alongside the challenges. We talked about medieval cities a bit earlier. What was it actually like to live in one?
Imagine a medieval city. Okay. It's loud, crowded, smells everywhere. Merchants yelling about their goods, craftsmen working, constant activity. Cities were hubs for trade, crafts, ideas. They attracted people from all over, those looking for fortune, those just wanting to escape village life. Think you'd like it? All that energy, all those opportunities.
Sounds exciting, but also maybe a bit much.
That's city life, right? Mm-hmm. Full of potential, but also a lot of inequality. Rich merchants, guild masters, they lived well.
Mm-hmm.
The poor, not so much. And cities, well, they were prone to disease, fires, crime, a real mix of good and bad.
Like a tale of two cities, medieval style.
Perfect analogy. That contrast. That's what makes medieval cities so interesting. They were like mini versions of the whole medieval world, showing both progress and the problems. Speaking of progress, what about technology? Did they make any advancements?
It's easy to think they didn't, but I have a feeling there's more to the story.
You're right. The medieval period had some awesome tech advancements that changed things big time. One of the biggest, the water mill.
The water mill. Okay, what did it do?
It used the power of water to do work. Grind grain, power machines, even saw wood. It meant less manual labor, and people could get more done. Think about the impact that had.
Ah, but it was huge. Any other cool inventions?
Oh, yeah. They figured out windmills, important in places without a lot of water. They made progress in shipbuilding, navigation, which helped trade and connect different parts of the world. And, of course, there were military advancements.
Mm.
Better armor, weapons, siege engines.
So it was a pretty innovative time.
It was. And those inventions changed everything. They helped the economy grow, changed society, even helped knowledge spread. It really challenges how we think about the Middle Ages, doesn't it?
It does. Makes you realize history isn't just a straight line of progress or decline, but more complicated than that.
For sure. And the medieval period shows that complexity perfectly. But hey, I gotta ask, with all this talk of castles and knights, have you ever thought about what they wore?
You know, I have. Medieval fashion is so interesting, so different from today.
It really was. Clothes showed your social status, your job, even where you were from. Imagine men in tunics and hose, layered up to stay warm. Women in long gowns or dresses, often with veils or head coverings. But it wasn't just about practicality, was it?
The source mentioned that colors and fabrics were a big deal. Like, they showed how important you were. Did they have their own version of the fashion police.
Uh-huh. You could say that. Bright colors, fancy fabrics like silk and velvet, those were for the wealthy. Peasants wore more practical stuff, wool, linen, and some colors like purple meant royalty, power, prestige. It's funny how clothes, something so basic, can say so much about a society, right?
It's true. Just like today, fashion was a way to express who you were, what group you belonged to. But let's shift gears a bit. We focused on knights and kings. What about the women? What were their roles in medieval society?
That's a great question, one that historians are paying more attention to these days. For a long time, women's stories were ignored, hidden behind the stories of men. Their lives, their contributions, they deserve to be known, don't you think?
Absolutely. It's like they were the unsung heroes of their time.
That's a great way to put it. But when we look closer, we see that women's lives were just as varied as men's. It depended on their social class, their family, their individual circumstances. But overall, marriage and motherhood were the most common roles.
Not surprising, given how things were back then. Makes you wonder if they ever challenged those expectations, though.
You're right to ask that. Some women, especially those from wealthy or noble families, did have some freedom and influence. But for most, their lives were controlled by their fathers or husbands. It wasn't a society that really supported women's rights, was it?
It sounds very limited compared to today.
It was. But even with those limits, women found ways to have some control, to make a difference. Think of the women managing households, raising children, working, even participating in religious life. They made their contributions, even if it wasn't always acknowledged.
It shows how strong they were, how resilient. Even in a system that didn't always value them, they found ways to make their voices heard.
Exactly. And let's not forget, even in societies where women's roles were limited, there were always those who broke the mold. Women who challenged expectations, who followed their passions, who made history. Their stories remind us to look beyond the general trends and find those individuals who dared to be different.
It's inspiring to hear about those women, the ones who paved the way for others. Their stories deserve to be told.
They do. And they show us that history is full of surprises. We should never underestimate people's ability to shape their own lives, even when facing tough odds. But let's get back to the bigger picture of medieval intellectual and cultural stuff. We talked about literature and architecture. What other areas were they good at?
It's clear now that there was more to the medieval period than just knights and castles. They were intellectually curious, creative.
Right. It was a time of intellectual growth, rediscovering old Greek and Roman texts, universities popping up, new philosophical and theological ideas spreading. It was just about surviving. They wanted to learn, to explore new ideas. Does that surprise you?
A little, yeah. I always thought they were more focused on practical things, like farming and fighting.
It's easy to think that, isn't it? But the medieval period set the stage for what came later. Think about the Renaissance, all that amazing art and intellectual change. Or the Scientific Revolution, which changed how we see the world. Both of those were influenced by what happened in the Middle Ages. It's cool to see how these different historical periods are connected, how ideas from one time can shape things centuries later.
It makes history feel more dynamic, interconnected, not just a bunch of separate events.
Exactly. And that's why studying history is so important. It's not just about memorizing facts. It's about understanding how the past shapes us today and even influences the future. But hey, I gotta ask, all this talk about castles and knights, have you ever wondered about the superstitions and folklore they had? What did they believe about the world?
Now that you mention it, it's a side of the medieval period that's always fascinated me. All that mystery and the supernatural.
Imagine a world where magic and superstition were everywhere. People believing in witches, werewolves, fairies, all sorts of supernatural beings. It's like a fairy tale come to life, right?
It does sound magical, full of wonder.
It's easy to romanticize it now, but for them, those beliefs were real, and they shaped how they lived their lives. They wanted explanations for things they didn't understand, ways to protect themselves from bad luck, ways to make sense of a world that often felt uncertain.
So it wasn't just stories to scare kids, but beliefs that shaped how they saw everything.
Exactly. And when we understand their beliefs, we understand them better. They wanted to explain the world, deal with hardship, find meaning. It reminds us that even though they lived so long ago, they had hopes, fears, worries, just like us.
Makes them seem more human, doesn't it? Not so different from us, after all.
That's the beauty of history. It shows us that even though times change, we're all human. We share experiences, emotions that connect us across time.
That's a great point. History isn't just dates and names. It's a way to connect with the people who came before us, learn from what they went through.
You got it. And speaking of connecting with the past, there's one event we can't skip over. The Black Death. It was a turning point in medieval history, a tragedy unlike anything else.
It's hard to even imagine living through something like that. I mean, the Black Death, the bubonic plague, it just swept through Europe and Asia in the 14th century, killed so many people. The source says maybe a third, even half of the population died. It's hard to wrap your head around numbers like that.
I know. It's almost impossible to grasp the scale of it all. Wow. Entire villages gone, cities deserted, just unimaginable devastation. It really changed the medieval world forever. It was a trauma. A collective trauma.
And they didn't even know what caused it, right, or how to treat it. It must have been terrifying.
Absolutely. Facing an enemy you can't see, can't stop. It must have felt like the end of the world. People were desperate, trying anything, religion, old remedies, whatever they could to find some hope.
Did they even have any idea how it was spreading? Did they try to, like, isolate the sick?
It's interesting because even with this huge crisis, they still didn't really understand how diseases worked. No knowledge of bacteria or viruses like we have today. Some thought it was bad air. Others thought it was God punishing them. They tried isolating the sick sometimes, but they didn't really know how to stop it from spreading.
It must have felt like there was nothing they could do.
Probably felt that way for many. But even then, even with all the death and fear, there were incredible acts of courage and kindness. People risking their own lives to care for the sick, to bury the dead, just trying to keep things going. Those stories are what really stand out, you know? The good in the midst of so much bad.
It shows how resilient people can be, even in the worst situations. But beyond the immediate impact, were there any long-term effects?
Well, even though it's horrific, the Black Death actually led to some big changes. For one thing, it created a labor shortage. So many people died that the peasants who survived, they actually had more power to negotiate. It actually helped to weaken feudalism, that rigid social system that had been around for centuries. Who would have thought, right?
It's amazing how an event like that, so terrible, could actually change society so much.
It shows you history is full of surprises. And the Black Death didn't just change the social order. It also made people question their beliefs, their traditions. It opened the door for new ideas, new innovations. It's like, in a way, the plague cleared the way for a new way of thinking.
So even from something so devastating, some good came out of it.
Exactly. And that's why it's so important to study history. It's not just about the past. It's about understanding how it shapes us, even today. We can learn from those who came before us, from their mistakes and their successes.
This whole journey through the medieval world has been full of surprises. We've seen past the romanticized images, from the reality of castle life, the challenges of their medicine, the joy of their festivals, the brutality of war, and how resilient they were in the face of things like the Black Death. It's been quite a ride.
And we've only just scratched the surface. The medieval period, it's often misunderstood, but it's full of fascinating stories, and we can learn so much from it.
So as we wrap up our deep dive, what's the most important thing you want our listeners to take away?
I want them to remember that the medieval period, just like any time in history, was full of contradictions. It was a time of both darkness and light, of progress and setbacks, of cruelty and compassion. But most importantly, it was about people. Real people dealing with real challenges, just like us. They had dreams, they loved, they fought, and ultimately they shaped the world we live in today.
I couldn't have said it better myself. And it's important to remember that the medieval period isn't just some distant past. It's part of who we are. It's influenced everything from our languages, our laws, even our values and beliefs.
It's our heritage. The more we understand it, the more we understand ourselves. It's a journey through time, but it's also a journey of self-discovery.
And on that note, I think it's time to bring our journey to an end. We've explored, questioned, learned so much about this fascinating period. And to our listeners, I encourage you to keep exploring.
Yes, keep asking questions, keep learning, keep discovering. The Middle Ages, even though it feels so far away, still has so much to teach us about ourselves and the world around us.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the medieval period. Until next time, keep exploring.